So welcome to our Village River Forest regular scheduled board meeting. If I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Johnson. Trustee Bachner. Here. Trustee Gillis. Trustee O'Connell. President Adusi.
Here. Okay. Do have a quorum, so I'd ask everyone to please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okie dokie. Let's see what we got back there. I gotta come in. Thanks. Okay. Okay. Like is there any street barriers? No street barriers. Yes. Okay. So Phyllis, if you wanna, is Phyllis here? There she is. Is that on, Phyllis?
Is there a button?
Push?
Yeah, there yes. It is.
I'm Phyllis Rubin. I'm 411 Ashland. I want to make a public apology to my private venting after the last meeting. I think it was a long and frustrating meeting for all of us. You were all patient. We were all patient, but then I went home and I had a lot of feelings. So I apologize. I didn't have any negative feelings about staff at all. That was not anything. I think I was just asking about why Lake and Lathrop was always at the end of the meeting, and you explained it. Okay. Hope you accept my apology.
No, yes, accepted.
About Lake and Lathrop, I see the Wednesday Journal has actually mentioned this too. The sidewalks, this is what I want to mention today. I haven't really walked there every day to see how long it's been the way it is. But you know, on Lathrop, there's a sinkhole. And on Ashland, there's boards. There's no barriers to say don't walk here. Kids walk it. I think they might avoid it. I don't know. If anybody falls, I think it's your property, isn't it? So I think you would probably be responsible. So, and it doesn't look good. Okay. And that's all about Lake and Lathrop. The polystyrene ban. I represent Go Plastic Free, the Interfaith Free Network, and the League of Women Voters Environmental Section. And we're very pleased that you're going to be voting on this. And I hope you voted in, because any move toward banning toxic plastic is a move in the right direction. I learned about 5 years ago, I think it is now, that styrofoam is toxic when they make it and toxic when you recycle it. So we have to get rid of it. And the only way to get rid of it is stop using it. So thank you. And I hope you vote yes. I may not stay till the end this time, but
Maybe we'll go quicker.
Okay. Yeah. Then maybe
don't
I will
that,
stay.
Promise.
Okay. That's all. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Phyllis. Okay. So I'm going to ask Jean Collard if you can come up, since the barriers are not on them.
Good evening. I live in the 1322 block of William Street, and I'm here to voice my opposition to the four barriers at Bonnie Bray Clinton, Lemoyne, and Greenfield Street. I note that the village's traffic safety study did not recommend these. My understanding also is that traffic on Monroe and William is now at really a dangerous level. I've lived there for 30 years, and I can remember when it was a complete throughway from Division up to North Avenue, because there were no stop signs. The stop signs have certainly improved things, but I noticed in the last 4 months, I have to back out of my driveway, and many, many times traffic is coming at me from both directions, and a lot of it fast. So it's become noticeably more difficult just in my own household. I also wonder why we need all four barriers, maybe just two, or if somebody could explore the possibility of perhaps making Bonnie Brae a one-way street north from Division, Greenfield up to North Avenue, if that avoiding that traffic light is what's causing some of the, you know, the issue in the first place. But I politely register my opposition to all four barriers. Thank you.
Thanks, Gene. Elizabeth?
I'm Elizabeth Overland, 1322 William. I'm in his household. I too just wanted to register my objection to those. I'm concerned about the safety, and I will say I have found it to be busier on our street, appreciably busier, and we have lived there. You know, we used to have little kids there. So, I mean, I'm happy for any stop signs we put up anywhere in this village. That's been a great improvement from when we moved in, but I'm concerned about those barriers.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Okay, T. Michael?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for hearing me out. I live right there on Harlem, right across from the baseball fields, and I'd like to voice my opposition to those barriers. You know, it's how many blocks do I have to drive out of my way just to get into my house these days? It also is causing people to do all kinds of, you know, contortions and making left-hand turns and driving down the alleys. And those alleys were not meant to take traffic. They were just meant to provide access to the parking spaces. And that's changing. And, you know, you have kids playing out there, too, that live in those townhouses. I mean, somebody's kid's going to run out when somebody's driving down that alley because they need to get somewhere. And, you know, if you shut that down, then there's all of those people in all those apartments aren't going to be able to get to, you know, their parking spaces, but by going several blocks out of their way, which is already irritating, respectfully. So for that reason, I would respectfully like to have them removed. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so Mindy, next.
Years ago, 2,977 Americans died in airplanes from New York, Pennsylvania, and D.C. We promise not to forget. We've had a lemonade stand event for 21 years. And our village can't remember. I'm very sad, not only because I attended a dear friend's funeral today, because no one in the village remembered. Can look outside. The flag is still at the top of the pole. Today should be half mass. I was in New York. I lost friends. And I asked the VBOT to pass an ordinance from this day forward to never forget. Make sure the flag is flown at half mast every 9/11 in perpetuity. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Mindy. Okay, and Susan, you can speak now, or you want to speak when we get to the item? Okay. Okay, that concludes, unless somebody else has any comments. Okay, so that concludes public comment. We'll go ahead and move to elected officials' comments and announcements. So I'll just ask maybe Katie, if you don't mind starting.
Sure, thank you. I've got a couple things. First, I came directly from the Lemonade Charity stand on Bonnie Brae today, and despite the rain, it was really well supported and attended. And I want to thank all the village staff and elected officials who came and supported the lemonade stand today. For those who didn't have a chance to go or support, the two charities that were selected this year by the block are 4x4x4, which is a group that sets up summer internships for those who otherwise, 13 to 17-year-olds who otherwise wouldn't get an opportunity for an internship, 4 hours a day for 4 days a week for 4 weeks during the summer. And we're hoping that our village next year is going to offer an internship spot to one of these youngsters. And then the other charity that was selected was Yemba, which supports youth and families with extracurricular and in-school activities. If you want to still support either of these charities through Lemonade, you still can do it online, even if you weren't there today. And the website is 911lemonade.com. That's 9-11lemonade, spelled AID.com. The second thing I wanted to mention is that we have the privilege of having a young filmmaker in River Forest who was awarded an honorable mention in this year's One Earth Young Filmmakers Contest. And the awards are going to be happening this Sunday. I put a bunch of postcards for the awards on the table back at the back of the room. Please take one. You can attend in person or online. It's free either way. There's free popcorn if you go in person. The name of our student who won an honorable mention is Andrew Older. Mm-hmm. He won for his film Invasive Fish in the Des Plaines River. You'll find it fascinating. It's a movie, a short film about something that's happened right here in our backyard, literally. And then the final thing I wanted to mention is that there is a new state law that passed less than a month ago that allows consumers to bring their own refillable bottles like this to restaurants and retailers. You can bring your own containers and you can ask these outfits to put their food and drink into your own container rather than into polystyrene or paper or metal or plastic. So it's going to be reducing waste. And I asked Seth on behalf of the Sustainability Commission to look into this and to publicize it as much as possible. That's all I have.
Okay, thanks.
Nothing to add. Thanks.
Chris? I just have one. Actually, I got two items to add now that Katie mentioned about the mugs. The first thing I do want to acknowledge, today I did at my college participate in the moment of silence for all the individuals in 9/11. And it was humbling. Again, it was at my college, but I'm working there. So unfortunately, I couldn't be over here. But we did want to honor, remember all the individuals who have fallen in, at 9/11. That also includes all the first responders that also gave up their lives. And also my heart and prayers go to the families for all those individuals who passed away. So you will remain in my prayers. The last thing is I'm not putting a pitch to Starbucks, but I go to Starbucks with that refillable. They actually give you 25 star points in addition to a 10% discount. But that's just an example of the types of restaurants that are also trying to encourage using sustainable efforts and mugs like that. So that's it. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Chris. Erica?
I want to start with the land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, the Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. And it was wonderful to see the gathering at Lemonade today. and the two organizations I was very impressed with. The one thing that I think the Yemba organization made very clear was that there are kids who get mentored by other kids. Those kids get a stipend. And then there are adults who get, who mentor the kids who are mentoring, and they get a stipend, and then they have jobs available there. So if you're interested at all, there's a ton of ways that you can help. You can get a stipend or a job. And I did want to recognize 9/11 and everybody who died on that day 22 years ago. And it makes me so appreciative of the first responders that we have here in River Forest and in all of our neighborhoods. What you know that you could potentially be giving up in any given day. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Erica. Yes. I agree. I echo everyone's sentiment on 9/11, that horrific day 22 years ago, when we lost so many people tragically. So because of that, I'd like to give a moment of silence. If you don't mind, to honor those that passed that day and worked hard to save as many lives as possible. Okay, thank you. Second, I want to apologize to our residents for not taking the flag down half mast. That should have happened. Unfortunately, it was probably a bit disrespectful to what needed to happen, especially on this day, 9/11. We will hope it will never happen again, and we will ensure that we take it down to half mast for all the right reasons. So my apologies on behalf of the village. I take responsibility for that. The second thing is I also attended the lemonade stand. It was a charity event. It was great. Enjoyed it. It was great. Even under the rain, there were so many great people. And I'll tell you, Wonderworks came out with a phenomenal suds machine, and the kids were having a great time. And the two recipients of the donations were just very grateful. And we've already heard from the trustees here on just the importance of all of that. That was great to see. It's just great to see how wonderful our community comes, even under the, you know, under rain and thunder, they still come together and they still make things happen. So we are a great, resilient community. And again, on behalf of the village of River Forest, to all of our first responders, we thank you for all the hard work you do day in and day out for us. It doesn't go unnoticed. So thank you. Also, just echoing a little bit about the Roosevelt, the Young Filmmakers Contest. Lisa wanted to, she's the sustainability liaison, and she also wanted to mention Andrew Older, who is going to won the honorable mention for the film Invasive Fish in the Des Plaines River. So that's kind of exciting. We continue to have really creative kids in our community. And they always rise to really great either winning or honorable mentions, and it's a wonderful thing to have. Kudos to Andrew, and hopefully we'll celebrate him in the future. That's all I have right now, so we'll go ahead and move on. If anybody else doesn't have anything else, we'll go to the consent agenda. Before we go, I guess Lincoln Lathrop. Sorry. Right after. So, Mark, would you want to come up and give us an update on the project? Thanks.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. We were just here a couple weeks ago, so not a huge update, but I believe we talked about that the steel fabrication drawings that are needed prior to them actually fabricating were in process. We've made a couple of steps closer to getting those completed. So we're close to having that part of the process done, as well as the electrician has been on site installing in-ground, in-slab, electrical, underground work has proceeded through most of the couple of weeks that we've since we've been here before. I do not have a definitive update on financing other than that it is in progress and the guys are attacking that diligently, but no specific update. But we are well aware of the deadline coming up at the end of the week. So those are really only updates that I have.
Well, I would agree. The other things you should be aware of is the sidewalks.
No update, but we are aware of it. I believe since the last meeting or right around that time, we did get citations issued for that. So we're certainly aware of that. Contractors being pushed to address that ASAP. I went by there prior. But yes, we're aware of it, but just don't have a definitive sort of date of when it'll be addressed.
Right. So just so I heard that, there are citations that were provided to Lake and Lathrop on the their inability to get to the sidewalks as we would like them to get to.
Sorry.
All right. Okay. We'll move on to.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Mark. Go on to the presentations. So we have several from Jim. Thank you, Chief. And I'll let you start with.
Good evening, everyone. We're very proud to be here today, especially on 9/11, to present some of the hard work and output from your public safety department. The first presentation we're doing tonight is on our active bystandership for law enforcement, or ABLE. Tonight's presentation is going to be done by our liaison to the program and also our certified instructors. And right now I'd like to bring up Sergeant Ben Ransom.
Hey.
And Detective Denise Zermeno for the presentation.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Just want to say briefly before I get kicked off that I've been in crime prevention for the last 5 years, had a lot of opportunities to meet all of you and work with you in different capacities. And I just want to point out our new crime prevention officer, Megan Drake, at the back, who's transitioning into the position and will, I'm sure, have the opportunity to work with all of you. So she's been working behind the scenes. So just wanted you to know that she's been involved with a lot of these different endeavors. So briefly, what is ABLE, active bystandership for law enforcement? It's these three pillars that you can see up on the screen: preventing harm, transforming culture, and strengthening communities in the scope and in the lens of police encounters with the public. And can we go to the next slide? The mission is a few different parts. So this is headed by Georgetown University. I think, as we know, and so their mission involves offering training to all police officers in the United States. They act as a clearinghouse for all data and research on the subject. They provide guidance to agencies, not just to train their officers, but to create programs using ABLE. They establish standards, which they hope will be met across the board, of course, and connect ABLE partners. And so I think, as we presented in the past, the buy-in was done between us and the community. We had to get letters of support, which we did from Dominican University, from School District 90, and from the River Forest Community Center, support saying we support that they support our agency in pursuing this, but also the agreement that they're going to be partners with us, holding us accountable, and in this combined goal for this active bystandership. So let's talk about quickly what active bystandership is. So it's these three things. It's in concept, it's boiled down to these three points: authorizes and empowers law enforcement officers to intervene on another officer's action, regardless of his or her rank. So this is, it's not as simple as an officer doing something wrong because they're a bad person, but it can go from a range of variety of different issues. Everyone has a bad day. So officers have bad days too. Officers who end up working a double shift and are fatigued and are handling a situation maybe not at their best. It's a way to look out for one officer, to look out for another officer, in the context of keeping them safe, keeping the citizen safe, and then providing established support for the community, for the agency, and kind of all working as a community towards that one goal. So it's that part. It's teaching officers how to successfully intervene. Programs like this, bystandership intervention, have been in place for a long time, particularly in the medical field with airline pilots. but this is standardizing it for police officers. And it's not just knowing that it has to happen, but how to do it effectively, how to do it safely, how to do it in a way that will keep everyone safe and de-escalate a situation, and that kind of thing. So it's just, it's how to recognize it, how to actually do it successfully, and protecting all those involved. We talk about that first point, regardless of his or her rank. That is to say that if an officer sees something wrong with a supervisor, that they feel empowered and authorized to step in for everyone's protection in that matter. And since we've rolled this out from both of our chiefs, I think we're in our first class all the way to the newest officer. We've all been trained. We've all come to the agreement that, yes, if you see something, that you are empowered to intervene and to make sure that everyone is safe and we're doing the right thing. So that's really the strength of the program. So the stakeholders are listed up here. I know it's written kind of small, but community members, law enforcement, us, of course, the community at large, and you guys being our local government, and then businesses. This is really, you know, as our officers respond to calls in all these variety of places around town, all of these will be kind of encompassed into our day-to-day responses and how we treat this. So it's really incorporated into every facet of ABLE. And so a little bit further on ABLE on the next slide. So as I said, it's housed in Georgetown University Law Center. It's meant to prevent, reduce harm, and also to promote officer wellness. This is also a big strength of this compared to some of the similar programs, is focusing on officer wellness and keeping officers, checking in officers' mental health and well-being from officer peer-to-peer, from the agency itself, checking in officers is going to help them in the field to be able to take care of themselves and enable them to take care of others. It focused on de-escalation, stopping issues before they start, and really recognizing that if someone, recognizing that situation, whether it be body language or just an officer having a bad day or something like that, that you think could possibly result in some kind of issues, whether through interaction or their own job performance, to get to the base of the problem and attack it from that point, as opposed to waiting for something to happen. So reducing harm and building trust, that's what we're all about. It's about transparency. It's about partnership. And we have nothing but success and good stories so far. We have had some agencies reach out, some other police agencies reach out, hearing about that we've started this and looking into how they can roll it out their own departments, which is a testament to its effectiveness and that the word is spreading about it. A few more slides that we're going to turn over to Detective Sermon.
Put this down a little bit. Good evening. I'm going to apologize ahead of time if I get any cough attacks. I'm suffering a little bit of a cold. Just going based off what Sergeant Ransom was talking about, ABLE is kind of focused more on a culture change and police altogether. That's in the personal wellness field, community relationships, and also, you know, working with our community to kind of build a rapport and trust in each other. Holding the accountability between both of us as an agency, our community, working together on that. I'd like to touch on the officer wellness stuff that, you know, we've all seen on the news. Suicide in police and law enforcement has been on a pretty high number. So we're encouraging a lot of our officers to seek for help, give them the resources also. And like he touched on what's available and recognizing those signs, whether it's a colleague, it's someone that you don't see often. What are those red flags that maybe we want to address before something comes of it? As well as those behaviors, right? If we know that we work with one another for many, many hours a week. So kind of recognizing those signs that there might be something off, or knowing what triggers them and helping them step away from the situation, maybe stepping in and having them take a moment to kind of get themselves together. And again, if the community sees something, we might not catch it, but, you know, building that relationship so that you guys can let us know if there's something that maybe we're not doing correctly and working with one another to fix that. You can go ahead. All right. So how does ABLE work? So I'd like to point out that we were one of the, you know what number we were again? One of the first agencies in Illinois to kind of go through this program. Our agency, up to, I believe, the newest officer, are current on this. So we all have to attend 8 hours of training in order to be considered able trained. It's based on officer wellness, videos of what was done wrong, what was done right. And also, like I mentioned, the resources that are available if needed. We're trying to eliminate that stigma and build a more reputable police department between our community. Sergeant Ransom kind of touched. I'd like to point out, after those 8 hours, we are required to have a 2-hour refresher every year to kind of just keep the pillars that they call on check, and that everybody kind of knows and refreshes their mind on what's expected of them when you're able certified. Like Sergeant Ransom said, we can't just qualify for this. Our community has to vouch for us. Agencies and community organizations have to write us letters of support in order to even go through this program. So I believe they were all kind of on board with us participating in it, and they were thrilled to know that we were going to be a part of this. Just building the culture, helping everybody kind of work with one another. You can continue. It's all based on evidence that's gone many, many, many years of research with the Georgetown University. And it's been enacted, like Sergeant Ransom mentioned, in the medical field and other sort of professions that are the pilots. And it's just been all over the place. So it's kind of nice that now they're making a standardized thing for just law enforcement in general and changing that overall culture. It's not only improving our careers, it's also improving, your officer wellness stuff. So just making sure that you're in the right state of mind to even perform your duties. You can go ahead. And so this is open to anybody. There's a website on there if you want to learn more about it. We're encouraging you guys can take this to your local law enforcement and ask how they can participate in it. It's been excellent with us, and it's been nothing but good feedback with the agencies that have participated in it. You want to continue with that?
So in commemoration of that, we do have some ABLE coins to hand to you.
Hi, Jim Greenwood, Deputy Chief from the Police Department. I just wanted to also let everybody know I was happy to meet with our program coordinator from Georgetown last week, and was told that we are in full compliance with ABLE's pillars, and that they're continuing to have us as part of their program. And they were very happy with the work that we've done and that we're going to continue to do. Like Ben and Denise said, not only continued training, but getting the word out that we're being as part of the project. And all of our officers will receive a pin to wear on their uniform that have been certified, and that's everybody. So that's good. Great. And what we have for the trustees is a challenge coin that is the same logo and same idea, since ultimately the support for the program came from the village board. So thank you.
Great, good. Thanks.
Hand them out.
Yeah, super.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, this is great. Wow.
That's nice.
Very nice. Thanks.
You can give it to John or Matt.
Super.
Release it.
Yeah, oh, the three of us. Yeah, give it to
three trustees.
Make sure they get the other trustees get them.
Correct.
Thank you.
I just want to thank Ben and Denise and Deputy Chief Greenwood for their very hard work on this. And once again, a lot of feedback. How's it going? Next, and not to delay, approximately a year ago, we identified the need to update our challenge coin. And I won't go into the details of what is a challenge coin in the background, but it's been over 20 years since we renewed that program and updated it. And we had a committee, and that committee included Sergeant Grill, Anthony Cortez, who's in the corner, and also Paul Bradley, who's assisting with a call on the street right now. tonight assisting with the presentation with regard to the new challenge coin will be, of course, Sergeant Ransom.
Hello again, everyone.
Hello.
So, briefly, as Chief said, he commissioned this and asked for volunteers to join this committee and pick out, select what the challenge coin was going to look like. I'll briefly just describe that the challenge coin, you know, it's on the slides, but the challenge coin, the concept dates back to World War I, where members of special units would confront each other and display their coin as a form of spirit de corps, camaraderie, devotion, enthusiasm for their separate units. And so that has made its way, transcended its way into law enforcement, and something that some of our officers, myself included, collect these coins, give them out, and trade them. And just want to say, Officer Cortez and Officer Bradley did not hesitate to join up and spent their own personal time helping design the coin itself and coming up with some great ideas of what it was going to entail. So we'll try to get the pictures up. But on the front side, we have a star with an American flag in the background. There's a outer ring around the coin composed of our conceptual pillars that are used to guide our police operations, which are dignity, trust, respect, diversity, and community. Hopefully we can pull it.
No, well, he's holding it up. Hold it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right, we'll hand him up. All right, on the back side, the center of the coin includes both current patrol and supervisor patches, as well as three historical patches formerly used within the department that help remind officers of our rich history in this village.
So much.
And the outer ring of the coin includes a phrase, a tradition of service to the community, which has been and continues to be a mantra of our police department staff.
Mm-hmm. Wow, nice.
So,
that is nice.
So privileged to possess one of these, and our officers are given these part usually when they finish their probationary period, and it's kind of a nice welcome from the chief to the department as official members of the police department.
Great.
If you open up the coin and look at the insert, it also has the pamphlet insert. It has a description and narrative of the history within our department of the challenge coin itself. So a little reading material.
Nice.
Oh, wow. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Great. Thank you. It's awesome.
I do have a question about the ABLE, if you're... Mm-hmm. I was wondering, I know something like that program can be very difficult to, like, gather metrics, but is there anything to be able to tell, like, if it's working or any way that you're able to, like, measure it?
So the measurements that I'm aware of are personal interactions used in the field and have had turned negative conversations into positive ones and had emails come in. And it's kind of that grassroots kind of thing where when we get those positive feedback, it's forwarded up through the chain of command. Deputy Chief Greenwood, are you aware of any other metrics that we have by sending through the ABLE program reporting?
That's a great question. So when we when I have to meet with a program coordinator from Georgetown, one thing that they want to ensure that the village is doing is and the police department is making certain that we're making the public aware that this program exists. As Sergeant Ransom and Detective Zermano had mentioned, it's not just about our great, you've got a program. It's letting the people know in the community. So if they see something that they think was a positive interaction or a negative interaction or something we could do better or something that they liked, they're free to reach out to us. And it's a two-way street. It's not a one-way communication. So with that, one of the important things is community outreach, letting folks know. And with that, we've one thing we've done is obviously doing this presentation. We've had a community presentation that we did in July with the community safety meeting. There's going to be a press release put out very shortly, just notifying, you know, what it's a great way to get the word out through the media that the village is participating in this, in the police department, with the support of our community members. And one other thing that the chief had the idea of was to develop decals, where it's not something that necessarily we're putting stickers on the cars, because that it gets really expensive. But basically, it's a sticker that'll be on the car, but it's a window cling that will advertise that River Forest Police Department is part of the ABLE project. And then there's, of course, a link on there and all that good stuff so that people can look it up and learn more about it. So it's more about, it's less about, you know, like you said, it's a very difficult thing to measure, but it's making certain that you're not just saying you're doing a program or believe in the culture and the training, but making certain you're holding yourself accountable to it and letting the public know that they can hold us accountable to it too.
Yeah. That's wonderful. I was also thinking something around like a pulse survey on the police staff to see, like, on a regular basis, you know, how does their wellness, you know, how is their wellness and mental health? You mentioned that there are programs that they can reach out to. Is there a way for us to get like general big numbers of like how many times?
So ABLE is very good about giving us the material that's needed to kind of follow up with our officers. We are working on, they gave us kind of like a self-assessment survey that we are to give out. It's anonymous. It's just basically for them to kind of assess where they're at emotionally, physically, that sort of thing. And in our training, we do talk about the resources that are available within the department, and then also what our health insurance and mental health insurance kind of cover to know what's out there, because you don't know unless sometimes it's too late. Yeah. And you don't know what's available until you actually need it. And then just based on what Deputy Chief Greenwood was talking about, I'd like to add that it's also about reducing misconduct. So it's kind of something that, preventing it. It's about prevention. So it's kind of hard to measure that as well, because, you know, fortunately, we haven't had many or any incidents. So it's about stopping it before it even occurs. So it's kind of something that we can't really put a number on.
Understood. Thank you.
Great.
I just looked on the ABLE website. And you're on there. There's 6 in Illinois, and it looks like we were the 5th accredited.
Okay. Trustee Brennan, we'll call that lucky number 5. Our next presentation, some of you that have been on the board for a while are familiar with the Illinois Traffic Safety Challenge. And we were first place in our size agency throughout the state of Illinois. This year, we're very honored also tonight to have Scott Christensen, who's the program director for the Illinois Traffic Safety Challenge, who's going to be doing a presentation with our own traffic unit officer, Dan Humphreys. And I'd like to welcome both of them to the podium for their presentation.
Great.
Thanks, Chief. Good afternoon or good evening, everyone. So you're going to be receiving the 77-page application that was submitted for this award. I will not review every page with you. We'll be here all night. Instead, I do have a quick and brief presentation just to show you a glimpse of some of the pages and the efforts that go into it and what it entails. So the Traffic Safety Challenge itself is broken up into 6 different categories: policy and guidelines, training, incentives and recognition, public information, education, enforcement activity, and effectiveness. So we briefly talk about the structure of our police department and what we offer so that they have an idea of what type of police department we have. Next, we showcase our general orders and policies and guidelines regarding 4 different categories. They look at DUI enforcement, speed enforcement, occupant protection, and distracted driving. So we showcase and display all of our general orders and policies and guidelines for those enforcement. Looking at the training involved that we received in 2022. So this is everything for 2022. So it just showcases all the different training we receive regarding traffic safety. We also look at incentives and recognition. So how does the police department in the village recognize our officers for their efforts and in those four categories? So as you see, many officers receive recognition from the chief of police and a certificate for their outstanding performance in speed enforcement, occupant protection, distracted driving, and DUI, as well as an officer did receive an award for from American. Can you go back one slide? The AIM, so the American Alliance Intoxicated Motorists. He did receive an award for his impaired DUI enforcement efforts for 2022. Next is public information and education. So what ways do we showcase our traffic safety program by the speed trailer signs, using social media, our press releases, and such. The next are press releases that are sent out during the holidays for DUI and seatbelt enforcement and whatnot. Next is looking at enforcement, our enforcement efforts. This slide showcases just our specific directed traffic missions that were conducted on each shift throughout the entire month. So there's some charts there on that. Next, more enforcement. It's just our total traffic stops was over 4,300 traffic stops last year. There were over 3,500 citations issued and 1,700 warnings issued. Also looks at the top five violations that were actually cited for on that slide as well. Moving on, just the different speeding citations that were issued in 2022, 512 speeding citations, 474 warnings issued for speeding. So speeding is a problem, but we're out there. Moving on, occupant protection. So we issued 55 seatbelt citations, impaired driving made 46 DUI arrests. So moving on, just with all these enforcements, so great, we're doing all this work. So what efforts are we seeing? So we look at a lot of the data and the traffic crash data that are on there to go and address those concerns in those areas to help reduce the injury and fatal accidents. So looking at the past couple of years, we look at our effectiveness for speeding enforcement, occupant protection, and you can see our numbers. Are positive in that regards. Same thing with impaired driving. Our DUI arrests are up from the past 3 years, as well as distracted driving. So once I'll point out on this slide, this is a map of all the traffic crashes throughout our village. The biggest thing I want to point out here is there was an increase of about 120. A decrease in about 120 traffic crashes if you look at the years 2018 to 2022. I'll go back one slide, which is a reduction of like over 22% in overall traffic crashes. So our efforts are paying off, and that's what we're seeing, and that's the goal here. So looking at more of the data here that goes into all this, it's looking at the time frame, the time of day, all that kind of stuff helps us in order to allocate our resources during those times and on those days. And with that, I'm going to turn things over to Scott Christensen, the director of the Traffic Safety Challenge.
Madam President, board members, I'm distinctly honored to be here this evening to help present the village one of Illinois' highest traffic safety awards. As they said, my name is Scott Christensen. I'm the program director for the Illinois Traffic Safety Challenge. We've been doing this for 30 years. This is our 30th anniversary this year of doing it. We started it back in 1993 and continued it every year since then up into this last year. The program you heard about what the program is and the kind of things that go into it. What I'd like to do is help you all understand what this program is not. This program is not a recognition for the agency that writes the most tickets. This is not a recognition program for who makes the most arrest. This is a recognition for the agencies in Illinois that have the most comprehensive traffic safety programs. While we acknowledge that enforcement is a component of all of this, the other aspects of the community outreach, the support, the training, all those things are weighted heavier than the enforcement aspect of that. We want to have people understand how important traffic safety is, that the efforts that you as a community put together and the board in support of the police department and their efforts make a difference. Officer Humphreys mentioned that you reduced over that time frame on average every year about 120 crashes a year. That's 120 people not involved in a crash that may have been injured, that may have died. Their programs are making a difference, not only to support the people that live, that work, and that travel through the village, but the whole community. It's not just the people who live here. It's the people who do all those things in your village. It makes a difference. And the program itself, you're saying, well, okay, what did the, you know, what did they do? They compete against like size and type agencies. You're not going to compete against a Naperville, which has 150 police officers. You're going to compete against agencies from across Illinois with the same like and size. We have county agencies, we have state police, we have university, and we have municipal. And so tonight, what I would like to do is present to the village of River Forest the 2022-2023 Illinois Traffic Safety Challenge, first place award for municipal agencies with 26 to 35 officers. Madam President, if you could come down, I'd like to present this to you. Right. And if I could have the chief come up here, we'd like to present this award.
For giving us this award. I just wanted to say thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. As a community, you guys are doing a great job. In addition to the Illinois program that I project director, I also worked and managed the national one, which is through the International Association of Chiefs of Police. So I've had the opportunity to see law enforcement agencies' traffic safety efforts from across the country. And your villages and your support is tops, not only just in Illinois, but it's one of the best that I've seen in the country. So you have a lot to be proud of as an agency. We appreciate your support, because without your support as a village board with their programs, without your support, community, to help support all of these efforts and help reduce the number and severity of crashes, you're making an effort to help support the Illinois Department of Transportation's Highway Safety Plan for the whole state. And you're making a significant contribution towards that. So again, thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Yeah,
and thank you again for giving me the opportunity to present tonight.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
Just briefly, because we are mindful of everyone's time, I want to thank Scott for coming in. He runs a very busy schedule. Not just in this area, but across the state of Illinois. So we're very appreciative of his appearance tonight. And we also are very thankful to Matt Walsh and the Village Board for allowing us to kind of showcase some of the work we do that you might not hear about or know about. Mm-hmm. And also hear not just from me, but hear about the hardest working individuals out here that are your police department.
Yeah.
So if we could just maybe... And thank you, Madam President. And,
thank you, Jim. And
on to the next item.
Well, yep. Thank you, Jim.
And all the officers.
Yeah, all the officers. People know one of our number one goal is to keep our number one priorities to keep our community safe. So this is a great addition to keeping our community safe. So thank you so much.
Oh, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Very good. We'll display this proudly right up there.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Super. All right. That was awesome. Thank you so much. We'll go ahead and move on with the consent agenda. So if I can get a motion in a second to approve the consent agenda items A through E.
Motion to approve the consent agenda items A mm-hmm. through E.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or questions regarding those items? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to read the items and then take the vote, including me.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, August 28, 2023. B, accounts payable May 2023, $1,782,014.16. C, monthly department reports. D, change order, sewer lining project, $2,512. E, change order, 2023 street patching project, $1,917.45. Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
President Ducey?
Yes. Okay, we'll move on to item 8. This is the recommendations of the Board's Commissions, item 8A.
I move we approve an ordinance amending the River Forest Village Code to prohibit the use of polystyrene foam foodware.
Second.
Okay. Would you like to take the podium? Welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, do you want to just give a highlight of the mm-hmm. ordinance? And because I know we're all for
sustainability. So this ordinance is largely based off of the proposed state legislation that right. the village has also passed a resolution in support of, and also modeled after Oak Park's ordinance that they had passed earlier this year. So it has the same implementation time frame as Oak Park's. Applying first to food service businesses with annual total income over $500,000 starting January 1st of next year. There is a provision in there that prohibits enforcement, only education during the first 4 months. So enforcement citations would not start until May 1st. And then for smaller businesses, it would take effect the following January 1st.
Okay. Any questions for Seth? No.
Simon's here too. I don't know.
Yeah. Hi, Simon. Thank you, Eric.
Chairman? I have one question about the language of this refers to foodware, but I am assuming it also includes drinkware.
Yes, I believe so. That was the intention to include foodware and drinkware. I believe in at least one of the whereas is we do make reference to a specific type of drinkware and coffee cups. But yes, it is intended to include all types of polystyrene foam foodware and drinkware to include styrofoam cups as well.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure that it actually did encompass that, even though it didn't say like foodware and drinkware in the ordinance language.
You're saying the whereas has it.
Yeah, I believe so. If that becomes an issue again, this is the exact same language that Oak Park has already adopted. Mm-hmm. I don't think they had a.
I'm comfortable with it.
Separate definition for drinkware.
There is a whereas that refers to it as food products, food containers, packaging, often in the form of coffee cups and takeout food containers.
I'm comfortable with the way it's.
I don't know if that.
So. That's fine based on the conversation and that incorporation in the whereas clause.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm happy that we copied Oak Park, but they copied our foodware. So it's all consider people.
Yeah. All right. I have one question. So places like grocery stores who maybe might have this on the shelves,
is a specific exemption in the ordinance for things that were delivered prepackaged in polystyrene foam. So if for some reason Jewel or Whole Foods had something on the shelves that came from a manufacturer already packaged in polystyrene, that would be exempt. What would not be exempt is using sort of the clamshell containers made of styrofoam at the salad bar or something, or the hot food bar or something like that.
Okay, but they could also sell those. They could sell foam
cups, basically.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Let's take the vote.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
President Ducey.
Happy to say yes. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go on to 10A. So if I can get
sure.
Motion second on that.
So I move to approve an ordinance waiving Chapter 8 relating to fences of Title 4 relating to building regulations for the installation of fencing at village-owned properties in the Madison Street TIF district and authorizing the execution of a contract for fence installation.
Second.
All right. Hello, Susan.
Susan Altier. I live at 12 Ashland, right across the street from the properties that you're discussing for the fencing. And I'm really just here to provide a little bit of context because it's very important to our neighborhood that it's clearly understood, I think, the why of this. Because it as you saw in the memo and the explanation, our initial ask for this fencing of what is now three vacant lots right in front of our homes was for wrought iron fencing, like you see throughout the village. This is temporary, but this property has been owned by the village since 2017. And has been heavily marketed over time. And in 2022, it was decided to demolish the property to kind of help with that effort. So although this is temporary, to be quite honest, we don't have a lot of faith that this temporary is going to be short-term. It's probably going to be longer because it's a big effort to get this developed.
Yeah.
And we all are dealing with excessive noise from the bars that are completely adjacent on Madison Street. As the police can probably attest to, multiple times we have had to call the police late at night, very late at night, numerous times, weekdays and weekends, because people are partying on our street. They're overflowing to this bar. A lot of it is because of the demolition. People can't park on Madison, so they are parking on our street, even though it's marked, it is for residents only. And it's loud, it's scary, there's the fights. And so our fear with these open lots is that they will become the park site. And that is why we were really hoping for something like a wrought iron fence that actually does propose a barrier that you can still see through. Jessica and Matt came back with us. They shared that what had been priced, luckily for the neighbors immediately north that now have a front row view of these vacant lots and Madison Street that they didn't before. Privacy fence is being put in for them, and that is great, but we don't cope with that, and they definitely. But what was proposed for the rest of the area was split rail fencing, kind of like what you see around, like a horse barn.
Oh.
And as you can see in the pictures that are in the packet, very easy to step on, step mm-hmm. over, slide mm-hmm. through. Doesn't look great, doesn't look fitting with our village. And so we pushed back very hard. They explained the price of wrought iron fencing, it's temporary, we get that. Still feel like it would be repurposed, but we understand. And so as a compromise, they did say they would go and have the picket fencing priced, and that's what's included in the proposal for the additional cost. So I just wanted to give some context to the additional cost, because I know as fiduciaries of the budget and use of money for the village, sometimes you need to understand why you're being asked to spend extra money. So I just wanted to give that context. And And the reality is our neighborhood has been paying into this TIF with our tax dollars since 2016. So it's our money. And we feel like it's a good use of the TIF that provides mental protection. I do have a few questions about what was proposed. The picket fence, it wasn't specified how tall it was.
I think it was.
And I guess I can just ask this question.
Yeah.
So, and in the drawings, it shows an 8 to 10 foot wide opening in all of these fences for access. And so I just kind of like to understand what that means and where that access is going to be.
Yeah. Good question. I went to me.
So in terms of the height for the picket fence, that's 4 feet throughout. The privacy fence has varying heights based on the request from the neighbors as to 8 feet along the actual length of the home and drops down to 6 feet so that the backyard is not kind of towered by that privacy fence. Now, but in terms of the picket fence, that's around the entirety of the Madison Street parcels and the three sides of the two residential parcels would be 4 feet tall. In terms of the opening, that will not be left open. That's just to indicate where there will be a panel that will be removed for when Public Works needs a service or any other vehicles need to get in there. So that will have a lock or kind of a sliding panel so that won't be open because that would be counter to what we were trying to do in limiting or deterring access.
All right. Susan, that ends your comments? Okay, thank you. All right, any questions? For Matt or Jessica regarding this. I know you spent quite a bit of time with the residents on this, and we've done it purposefully because it's a big change,
right.
And we know that, and we appreciate all their patience along the way. It's never easy to demolish three buildings and get everything right, but you know, we're there, and we want now to get it to a point where it makes it look good for the residents. So I appreciate the administration's work on that. I don't have any questions. I think you've answered the residents' questions, which is most important to us. So does anybody else have questions for Matt or Jessica?
I just wanted to ask, are the residents okay with the difference between 8 foot and 6 foot where they are?
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. And we'll confirm that as the lead time, the expectation that this will be done by the end of September. But yes, that's been in conversations with the neighbors,
yeah,
and we'll make sure that's specific.
That they requested it.
Yeah, that request actually came from
one. There are ones that are 8 foot, and there are ones that are six feet. So
steps down.
I would think that I would maybe want the taller end, but if they want the shorter end, wherever these houses are.
No, they're step downs. So if you ever go to like the Fresh Time, you see it by their house that their privacy fences and. Part of it is 8 feet, and then it steps down to 6 feet.
Yeah. So
if you see it, you go. It's
an angle.
Yeah, it's not on. I don't know if you. Yeah, this doesn't show.
Doesn't show the step down, but that request for the difference came from the neighboring property.
That's why I
wanted. Yeah. No, I know it's somewhat confusing, but yeah, check it out. Yeah. Look at it by Fresh Time. It's pretty cool. Okay. No further questions. Let's take the vote.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
President Odusi.
Yes. Okay. Very good. And just so you'll then this will be signed immediately and we'll get it rolling.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Contractors eager to start this
one. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, that I don't think that concludes our. We have no executive session, right, Matt?
I just wanted to say one thing about the polystyrene. The question. About whether it covers liquid. If you read it in total, it's clear it does in the sense that it applies to food service establishments, which doesn't distinguish between liquid and solid. So that would be the reason. I think it's clear.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Okay. No pun intended.
That's good.
It's clear. Okay. All right. Okay. With that, I will take a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Okay.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
President Odusi.
Yes.
Meeting adjourned.
Okay, great.